Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pop Health Podcast. This is Zach Morgan, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. I'm flying solo today as Gavin had some other commitments, but I couldn't be more excited to welcome our guests, Yvonne Leonard and Macaulay Fuzarin. I got it right. Excellent. Of the Home Care Services Bureau. Yvonne is the chief of the Continuing Care Branch. Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And Macaulay is the chief of the Home Care Services Bureau. So as you know, if you've listened to the podcast, we've actually had these ladies on with us. This is the third time now. Mm-hmm. And we really do appreciate you coming on with us, especially with how much everything has evolved and changed over the past year. Does it seem like it's been longer than that?
Oh, yes. It actually feels a lot longer than a year. Most of our staff just celebrated last week and the week before their year anniversary. And we were all kind of talking about how, wow, how quickly it went, but how long it feels. Like we've, you know, just grown so much that it feels like a lot longer than a year.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I can imagine. We've seen the changes quite a bit. I think that on the home care side, things maybe have leveled off a little bit for the home care organizations that, you know, we're on it early, but I can only imagine that maybe it hasn't all the way quite leveled off for you yet, but hopefully it's getting there a little bit. So like we mentioned, we're 1 year in, or just about 1 year in here. What is the number of first licensed home care organizations that have applied and been licensed through the state now?
So for the license, the actual home care organizations that have fully gone through the licensure process, we have a little over 1,000. Wow. And then we have a conditional license category, which is spelled out pretty clearly in our written directives, but gives a little bit more flexibility to people who are still going through the application process. We have about 315 of those, so a little over 300 conditionally licensed. Sure. HCOs. And then on the aid side, which is always really important, we have over 71,000 registered home care aides.
Wow,
right,
that's
now
really
in California.
Incredible. Yeah. That's incredible. So with the conditional licenses that you mentioned, so for those applications that are still coming through, are those people that maybe applied after the March deadline, or is it just that there were kind of back and forth to get their documentation correct, or what is the conditional?
It's a combination of both. It is people. So our big focus was technical assistance.
Sure.
You know, this was a new law that the industry some of them were very familiar with it. Some of the other HCOs weren't so familiar, and we wanted to provide as much technical assistance as possible. So for our conditional license folks, some of them are people that applied after that March timeframe. Some of them are still going through some of the application pieces, like the more difficult, challenging ones, maybe the insurance components or the bonds or things like that.
Sure.
We still have some applicants that are going through the background check process.
Right.
So rather than not accept their application and deny their application for things that are kind of out of their hands, we do the conditional license and continue to work with them for that process.
Sure. That's an incredible number in a year, first of all. I mean, that's also just an amazing amount of work that has gone into that. It is a little bit shocking just from the outside perspective too, knowing how many home care agencies there were before licensure and now the official number, the difference between that and seeing people either make that change or kind of adjust to it. You mentioned just over how many aides?
71,000.
And do you have any idea about the percentages or how many are affiliated versus unaffiliated at all?
Yeah, we're still kind of trending at about 9% that are independent, which are the unaffiliated aides. So 9%, and then the rest are affiliated to an organization and are working through the organizations.
Sure. And so just for the people that might not know, I would encourage you to check out either of the first two podcasts that we had, because it went into a lot of the technical details. But home care aides did not have to necessarily get registered through the Home Care Services Bureau with an agency. So that 9% would be the people that did that independently or on their own.
Yep.
Now, as the year has gone on, has registration tapered off, especially for home care organizations, let's say? Have you begun to receive less applications now?
Yes, I think so. I think definitely the beginning of the year, we saw a big push, a big flood. We kind of have tapered off. We do obviously want to gear up still our outreach efforts, and we kind of, you know, want to expand that a little bit, and we kind of expect that those numbers to increase again. But yeah, we're kind of evening out with both the home care aides and the organizations.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I guess, to be expected. It would have to be expected with the flood that you got initially with agencies that already existed that wanted to be licensed. And so I just can't even imagine what that was like initially. And originally, for the people that also might not know, you had three staff. And yes. So that was that initial flood of over 1,000 home care organizations was initially to be handled by three staff. You don't have three staff anymore.
No, thankfully. Yeah, we originally had three staff to kind of plan for implementation and you know, work through all of our policies and procedures, create our forms, all that kind of, you know, initial work. Then we were able to bring on a good portion of our staff last year. Again, like I mentioned, most of them celebrated their year anniversary. We're not quite fully staffed, but almost there. We have about 25 staff members. The kind of the layout of the bureaus, we have three distinct units, all kind of functioning pretty the same. So we have managers leading them, and then we have our home care services analysts, which many of you out there are familiar with because you have your own analysts that you work through. And then we have support staff that, you know, assist in more administrative functions.
Sure.
We do have one unit that's kind of more geared towards the home care aide piece. So managing the registry, working through some of the technical difficulties with the registry, that kind of assistance. But for the most part, all of our analysts are kind of in that technical assistance. They have their cases, they're working through applications, they're going to be doing the visits coming up. So that's kind of what our main focus is.
Sure. And so on the aid side, you know, one of the challenges that a lot of organizations had, and including, I think, your team and then the home care organizations and the aid themselves, was the exemption process. You know, not as soon as the live scan fingerprinting got implemented and exemptions had to be gotten. Has that process smoothed out a little bit? You know, how is that going for people? Has it standardized as far as like an amount of time that some of those take, or how's that exemption process working out?
So the exemption process, each exemption can take a different amount of time. Sure. Depending on the conviction. The one thing that we want to continue to stress is the exemption process will be faster if we receive completed packages. Right. From the individuals, and that does include arrest reports and certified judgments from the court of convictions. So the package being complete is very critical to the timeline. We have identified some efficiencies that we could make to improve the timing, but we know that most home care organizations in the past did their own background checks, and right. They would have them done within a couple days.
Right.
We don't ever foresee a day that we mm-hmm. could say our exemption process is 3 to 5 business days. So the process will be longer than what a lot of home care organizations might have been used to.
Sure.
But we are continually working to improve the process and to work with the aides and the organizations to help them understand what the process means and why it takes the time that it does take.
Sure. I guess just kind of on that thread, once you kind of really had seen, you know, got the initial flood, and then things kind of started to make themselves more normal, I guess. Were you expecting the number of transfers between organizations that you've been getting? I think that a lot of people are oftentimes surprised how many different organizations an aide might work for.
I think it was kind of a surprise because, you know, kind of what we've said this entire time is learning the industry and how fluid the industry is, and even numbers. You know, we talk about where we're at with licensed home care organization and registered home care aides, and we know that's not all of them. You know, we know we need to do better outreach. But I think the transfers did kind of, I wouldn't say shock us. I think we kind of anticipated a high volume, but they're extremely high volume of both the clearance transfers, which are a lot easier and kind of simple, and then the exemption transfers as well. So that is one process that we're kind of looking into and trying to figure out how we can streamline a little bit better for our processes, but also for the organizations that have to continually put in these transfer requests.
Right, right. So I guess just kind of jumping off there, you know, since we last talked to you or over the last few months, have you run into any kind of specific challenges more recently?
Like Macaulay just said, the biggest challenge is learning the population, learning the organizations, learning the aides, and making sure that we continue to implement and design a program that is flexible and sustainable.
Right.
We feel we have a very strong foundation, but each new day we learn something new, and that's difficult. We have regular stand-up meetings three times a week, and some of the staff have expressed their observations that our policies and procedures change on a regular and consistent basis.
Sure.
Because as we learn things, and that is difficult, we have organizations and or aides that will ask us questions, and the policy may not be in writing because it just got changed the day before.
Right.
So that's always a challenge, but we're very fortunate the staff that we have are high energy and they're very flexible and they're all very vested in this process and want to be successful in this full implementation.
Yeah.
So just the learning, the change.
We really do change. I mean, close to a daily basis, you know, even with little things. Like Yvonne said, we have really great staff that are super energetic and full of information and ideas. So it's like they're the ones that are taking the phone calls, getting the questions and things like that. And they'll come up with different ideas to answer questions better or, you know, this policy is not working out really well for the industry. Can we try this? And we'll try it and we'll see how it works. Likewise, and I think we try to communicate this in all of our outreach efforts and all of our webinars, but we really do like to hear from industry and different suggestions or ideas that they may have, because you guys are living in this world and you've been living it for so long that we really want to know your thoughts and ideas. And there's a lot of things that we've put into place and changes that we've made based on those suggestions as well. So we're definitely pushing change and trying to, you know, luckily, thankfully, because some people don't like it. Luckily, we hired a really good team that find it kind of fascinating and invigorating, because it is something that's kind of our daily norm.
Right. And again, I think that just goes back to the fact that I can't believe it hasn't even been a full year yet.
Yeah.
And that, you know, a lot of your team has just celebrated their year anniversary. That really is incredible. One thing that you had mentioned was outreach and education. I know there was a lot of it initially. How are some of the ongoing outreach or education, either to aides or to organizations? What do some of those look like? I know you mentioned your webinars. What does some of that look like?
The outreach to the home care aides is right now still minimal. We're trying to reach to the organizations first.
Sure.
But our website is our biggest outreach for the home care aides. We are meeting with the different advocacy groups on a monthly basis, trying to reach their population. We know that not all home care organizations are represented by them, but we continue to have two calls a month, well, training monthly, and then our telephone call. We are presenting at any speaking opportunity that we're given.
Right.
And we're hoping to, the department is going through an effort to revise our website, the entire department's website. So we're also hoping that once that effort is done, our website will be more consumer friendly for the stakeholders, for the public, for the aides, for just everyone in general.
Sure.
And once we start our site visits, which will be at the beginning of next year in the first quarter, we think that that will be a very large outreach once people see us in the field. Unfortunately, as we investigate some of the unlicensed complaints, that is also an outreach effort that will be beneficial for those that just maybe did not know about us, but for those that choose not to comply with the law,
sure,
it may be an unpleasant event.
Absolutely. And actually, you touched on a few things that I want to touch on, but I don't want to necessarily just leave it at challenges. Have you had any particular successes recently, besides the things that we've talked about and kind of revolutionizing this whole process? But have there been any really big successes lately?
One of the ones that I think was a big success, it seems small, but it's very large. We had heard from industry that being able to communicate with our caregiver background check bureau was difficult to get through on the line. Oftentimes required waiting on hold or being disconnected and having to call back. When we, the Home Care Services Bureau, first came about, we identified that the volume of calls was very large and one line was not going to accommodate 400 to 600 calls a day.
Right.
We implemented a virtual contact center, and it has been a huge success.
Great.
And because of the success that Home Care Services Bureau has had, we implemented a similar one, virtual contact center, with CBCB, the Caregiver Background Check Bureau. And initial results are that it's also the huge success that Home Care Services Bureau. So we want to be able, as Macaulay said, to hear from industry. We want to provide the technical assistance, and that's one means is through the telephone. So we're really excited about that success.
Right. Well, and that is huge. And I can tell you that obviously it was a difficult change for everybody, but you know, when we're talking to, you know, direct consumers or even, you know, healthcare centers or hospitals or those kinds of things, the fact that it's licensed now and is overseen and has an official background process and has this official oversight really puts a lot of people at ease. And so we're obviously very appreciative that you've been so that you've listened so much to some of the suggestions and worked with everybody. And I'm glad to hear that some of the things are really starting to smooth out. Part of that, though, is last time we talked to you, no vacation time or anything yet. Any time off, any leisure time lately?
Macaulay was allowed to take a 2-week vacation.
Wow.
And I think I only called her 7 times a day. once she tried to say she didn't have reception. I don't know if I believe that.
Right,
I was calling
right.
a landline. So, yes. And we're still granting Sundays on a regular basis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the staff are, again, as Macaulay has mentioned, they're very dedicated.
Yeah.
And as we talk about the holidays approaching, there's not a lot of, there's requests to, can I have an extended weekend?
Sure.
But staff really are excited about starting the visits in the first of the year. And they're seeing a light and they really want to be here, at least that's what they're telling me.
Yeah, no, they do. They do. And I probably will never take another 2-week vacation again. It was so hard. It was hard to kind of separate. And I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous and silly, but it was kind of hard to separate and not think about work. So it never is like far from your mind. And 2 weeks is an awfully long time to be gone. So I probably won't do that again. But it was enjoyable. We went down south with my family and went to Disneyland with my nieces and nephews and did all that fun stuff. But for the most part, still pushing through, very dedicated, very little time off. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, if it has to happen, we'll let it. But it's been busy but great.
Right. Excellent. Well, and Disneyland is great, although some of the lines there might have made you wish that you were back at work. So
you know what we did, though, which was so fun? We did the Mickey's Halloween party.
Okay.
And so my entire family dressed up as Star Wars characters. And this was the first time my 4-year-old nephew and 1-year-old nephew ever went to Disneyland. So the Mickey's Halloween party was great because the lines weren't bad. And it was at night and they did a bunch of trick-or-treating and everyone was in costume. So like my 4-year-old nephew was just in awe the entire time.
Oh,
so
excellent.
It was really fun. It was really fun. I would recommend it to anyone if they wanted to do that.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. Recommendations for next holiday season. So speaking about recommendations, now that things are kind of standardized out and a lot of the initial applications have all been completed, what would you recommend for places that do refer to home care agencies at this point, whether that is, you know, discharge planners at a hospital or community-based organizations? Now that the system is really up and running and has a robust list and tracking system of all of this, what would your recommendations be to those people that part of their job is connecting family with home care?
So we don't recommend any specific home care organization.
Sure.
But the intent of the Home Care Services Consumer Protection Act was to promote consumer awareness and protection. And so we do recommend, and we would hope that the hospitals would choose to use licensed home care organizations that do have the registered home care aide. We're not suggesting that independent home care aides that choose not to be registered are any less qualified, but we feel that the registration process for the home care aides does add a level of consumer protection, and so as the home care, licensed home care organizations do.
Sure.
So we do have the home care organizations are on the transparency website mm-hmm. for the Department of Social Services. So we hope that many of those, the hospitals or the discharge planners, are familiar with using the website and will continue to use it in the expanded role to include the home care organizations.
Right. And I'll plug this again at the end, but if just while anybody's curious right now, you can find that by, you can even just Google the Home Care Services Bureau and mm-hmm. look through and find the list. You can search by county, you can search by organization name. It really is a comprehensive list. What about for people, some people, the reality is that they're either going to or they don't have much of a choice but to hire privately. Obviously, there are other implications and things to think about. But as far as with your department here, what can people do as far as if they're hiring a private aide through your department? We talked about unaffiliated aides, right, basically is what right. I'm getting at. And so how does that work? How, if somebody wanted to hire privately, but they wanted them to, say, go through the background process, how would that work?
So the aide themselves obviously would have to elect. It's a voluntary process right. for the independent aides. So obviously like 9% of them, so a decent percentage, do elect to go through that on their own, pay for the background check, the application process, and do that partly probably for their resumes and things like that.
Right.
If a family wanted to hire a private caregiver and wanted them to go through this process, the best thing to do is probably call us and kind of work with us and just to talk through the application process.
Sure.
They would literally need to submit an application and go get life scanned and do that on their own.
Right.
So they wouldn't have that organization there helping them walk through the process. So we can do that. We
right.
can easily help the caregiver walk through the application process, explain the online registry, or if they have to submit an annual application, do that as well and be that technical assistance. But, you know, families do need to know that they can ask their caregiver to do this. But again, the caregiver can elect not to.
Sure.
And at that point, if it's something that's really important to them, they need to either find someone who will elect to go through it or someone who's already on the registry or something like that.
Right.
Again, if they have a name and some type of identification, we can look it up.
Sure.
The home care aide number is the best thing for us to look up. You
right.
know, that 75 normally, 75 number. But if they don't have that, some type of other identifier, and we can let them know if they've already been registered or not, because some of these people have.
Right.
But again, it is a voluntary process for those independent caregivers.
Sure. And I think it's important for people to know, too, that while your department has a lot of power on the independent side, there's only so much they
yes.
can do. So as far as like insurances and things like that, just a no. registered aide that's unaffiliated and not through a home care organization, that's not something that they would need to be registered. So
mm-hmm.
I just think that's important for people to keep in mind, at least. With the applications that were submitted kind of a flood all at once, and then, you know, the first deadline to be done by March, are there any pending applications? So I know that we talked about some of the conditional ones, but for the most part, have all of those initial applications cleared?
On the HCO side?
Yep, on the HCO
yeah,
side.
Yeah, for the most part, we've gotten through that initial flood, again, like you
yeah.
said, it was in March. We've gotten through all those. We do have a couple pending that still have their conditionals. Again, most of them are background check related.
Right.
But yeah, for the most part, that initial flood is our over 1,000 number. Actually, it's an addition because I think initially in March, I want to say we had, and I'm trying to remember, so this number
yeah.
could be wrong, but I want to say we had about 700
right.
maybe that had submitted
right.
an application in March. So yeah, most of them have had their licenses.
And if there are pending or conditional licenses, are those still able to be found on your website?
Yes.
Okay.
They'll say they will say licensed on the transparency website. If anyone has questions as to what type of license or things like that, just give us a call. We'll kind of walk through the process. But those organizations that have a conditional license are able to provide services and arrange for services either until the conditional is revoked, which means normally the application is denied
sure.
or something like that. So they can still provide services and arrange for services.
The one thing that we found on some of the applications, the older applications, and even some of the more current ones, is the home care organizations are not responding to our requests for
mm-hmm.
additional information.
Sure.
and we are asking them to please respond or let us know that they are no longer interested in pursuing the license.
Sure.
We've had to make a couple phone calls to where home care organizations just got busy and did not respond, but
sure.
we cannot continue a conditional mm-hmm. license
right.
Ongoing.
Right. And I think that's important for people to know too, that if you're ever talking to a home care organization that says, oh, they don't have a license number because it's pending or things like that, that they can still be looked up online
yes.
For the most part.
They and still so, have a number even if yep. they're pending. So yeah. that is important. Yeah.
And so kind of moving on to that thread a little bit, you had mentioned some places that haven't gone through the, mm-hmm. the license structure but are still employing caregivers. Have there been challenges with that? You know, have you run into that? Mm-hmm. What has that been like so far?
So yeah, there's definitely been challenges and we have run into it on both. So as we mentioned, one of the biggest challenges of implementing in general was just not knowing the numbers and not knowing who all the organizations were. So trying to find those unlicensed caregivers or unlicensed organizations is a challenge in itself. Thankfully, we have found some and we're actively, you know, researching and trying to find those unlicensed caregivers. We do kind of rely on industry to also let us know.
Right.
So if there's an unlicensed complaint, obviously you can call our bureau and we'll work through that complaint process. We also have an email box specifically for complaints, which I'm going to kind of say, I'll say a couple times, but yeah. it's HCSB complaints with an S at the end. At dss.ca.gov, and you can email your complaints. Even because the other challenging thing is some of these unlicensed organizations are actually follow the referral agency model.
Right.
So on a surface, they could look like an organization to the public or things like that. And as we get into our research and our actual investigation, we find out that they're a referral agency.
Sure.
But we actually really encourage just those initial thoughts of, hey, I think they're operating unlicensed. You know, let us do obviously the investigation and the research to find out. So definitely give us a call, shoot us an email, because we're actively looking into those organizations.
And those complaints can come in anonymous. Mm-hmm. We prefer to have the contact information just in case we need additional information, but we can take an anonymous complaint.
Yep.
You can also write a letter. We'll take the complaint, mm-hmm. the information, any way that the recipient wants sure. to give it to us.
Yeah.
And has that kind of hotline been successful so far?
I think so far, yeah. I do think that sometimes we have on the VCC that we talked about, we do have a specific prompt that takes you to the complaints. I think sometimes people tend to use the complaint prompt is not truly a complaint.
Sure.
So we kind of try to educate callers
sure.
on that realm too. But yeah, normally with complaints, it is the top priority. We have a analyst, that's dedicated and they rotate, but on a daily basis, we call them like the officer of the day, but basically they're there to take all the complaints, work through the complaints and handle that type of function, man our email boxes and do all that kind of customer service outreach. And then they rotate too. So definitely complaints are top priority and we
yeah.
work through them when we get them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. And I'm glad that people have bought into the process enough that they also have a vested interest
yeah.
in making sure that it's legitimate for everybody. I think that mm-hmm. was one of the again, there were challenges associated with the whole process, but I think that was one of the benefits is that it added this complete level of legitimacy mm-hmm. here in California that the industry itself, not necessarily legitimacy, but the regulation, mm-hmm. I guess, that the industry didn't have before. One of the things you mentioned that hasn't started yet, but that's going to be one of the biggest things now that a lot of the organizations are licensed is going to be the audit process. First of all, for those who may not know, what is the term for audits? How often will an organization be audited?
So I think the biggest thing is they're technically not audits. State government okay. has a very specific term of what an audit is. And so
gotcha.
We call them visits.
Visits.
And they really are a visit. So the requirement is a licensed organization has to have at least one visit in their two-year license. Licensure, so
yep.
once every 2 years, mm-hmm. in a sense.
And those visits are unannounced.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
we've had a lot of questions, when will my visit be scheduled?
Sure.
They are unannounced.
Sure.
And a lot of questions, obviously, when are they starting? And so we kind of have to keep the mystery there a little
right.
bit too. But, you know, we're starting towards the end of this year, really the beginning of next year into the spring. Again, they are unannounced. our focus is technical assistance. That's our, you know, our biggest thing is we really want to obviously connect the analysts with their organizations, face-to-face kind of communication, that kind of thing. It doesn't mean that if we do find some serious violations or violations that are outlined in written directives that we don't have to take action. Sure. But technical assistance is our big push and our goal for those visits.
Are those visits done by your team here, or is that by a team specifically for visits?
Yeah, it's done by this team. It's actually the visits are the analysts that you've been working with through the application process. So unless, of course, I mean, staff, there's turnover and things like that. But your analyst is the person that will be conducting the visits. So again, that's the technical assistant. You're actually going to meet the person that you call and ask questions to and things like that. That's the person who's going to be showing up and going through the files and conducting that visit.
And I know that it's all outlined in detail for those people that went through the actual licensure application process for those organizations. For those people that maybe aren't in the home care sphere or just might be listening casually, what is kind of the big overall view of what those visits are going to be looking for?
So the biggest thing, again, it is outlined in written directives. So right. If you are an organization, I really strongly encourage you to read through those.
Right, right.
But the biggest thing is we are doing the visits, and what we have authority to look at is pretty much the files. So we're looking at all personnel files. We're looking at your administrative files. For organizations, we do have a checklist right now posted on the website that kind of outlines what specific forms need to be in the files, just to kind of help with organization, because that's been a question too, is how do I need to organize? What are you looking at? So that kind of helps pinpoint things. But, you know, are the aides background checked? Do they have their TB? Do they have their training? Things like that. Again, a lot of the administrative files are in the application that you submit, but do you have copies of it? Is it updated? Insurance you could submit at the time of application may have an expiration date, like in the middle of your licensure. So you have updated insurance, right. All that good stuff.
Sure.
And we're looking at your policies and procedures. We don't have authority over investigating a home care aide as if there is an allegation of abuse that did not rise to a criminal conviction. But we will be looking at the home care organization's policies and procedures regarding abuse, prevention, reporting, and those types of things. We're looking at the organization, how they run the business.
Right. And I think that's an important point, too, for people to realize is that even though there is this official oversight now, the onus to run a legitimate, good home care organization is still on the organization.
Yes.
And so this is just the oversight part of that, or the standardization of all of that, too. So, you know, actually, we're wrapping up here, and I really appreciate the time for both of you. There are two more questions I wanted to get at really quickly. You said that you've been speaking at any places that would like you to speak at, and obviously you get a lot of questions coming in here. Are there maybe one or two questions that keep coming up over and over that you hear a lot?
I think the unlicensed care is obviously something that we hear a lot.
Sure.
I think that's a big deal right now. So we hear that. We get a lot of questions and a lot of calls about the home care aides and if they're registered or not, which I think will always be. That'll be standard.
But we do want to remind everyone that they can check the registry with the home care aide's name and HCA number.
Right.
So that is available 24/7.
If you'd like to look that up on your own.
Yes.
So the last thing I wanted to ask you is, we actually recently recorded a podcast with Senator Tony Mendoza from the California State Senate. And we recorded it with him because he is sponsoring, and I could butcher this number here, but I believe it's SB 648, which is actually a licensure for placement agencies. So when we were talking with him, it sounded a lot like the things that you had to go through in the licensing of home care organizations. Any words of advice for those people that might be starting that process?
I think the most important thing is, in designing and implementing any new program, is to ensure there's flexibility and sustainability. Mm-hmm. What we thought was going to be a solid process on day one, we identified on day two, it wasn't a solid process. So, I think that's been, I think our biggest success is that we have been flexible and we're always thinking of what's this going to look like in a year from now.
Sure.
And then partnering with the industry that you're regulating with.
I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think our communication has helped us a lot. And as we've mentioned, we're very grateful for all the comments, even the ones that have a lot of frustration. And
mm-hmm. Right.
We've learned from those comments also.
That is one thing that I guess not surprised, because I wasn't quite sure what to expect because it was also brand new. But one thing that I've just been really pleasantly, you know, it was unexpected how much a lot of this did feel like a collaboration going through the process. And actually, you know, you say that you're willing to talk with people, but you're actually willing to, to talk to people and answer questions. And it's been very much appreciated. So thank you both very much. And maybe also word of advice that more than one phone line, incoming phone line. Yeah.
And you know, I think the other thing is be prepared to change, but, be willing to listen. I think sure. really truly is the thing. You can't say you're willing to listen if you really don't open that door. So be willing to listen to people, even the frustrated people, because mm-hmm. to be honest, sometimes those are the most eye-opening calls and conversations. So just be willing to listen to people.
I mean, we do appreciate the ones, the calls that they said, thank you.
Right.
We went through this process. It felt right. So we want those calls to keep coming
right,
too.
Right. That, remember, they don't get vacations. So anything like that helps. Well, again, Yvonne McCauley, thank you so much for being on with us again. I know we've had you on a couple of times, and each time it's been a pleasure and a great learning experience. I know we have a lot of people that have been learning a lot from our conversations, and maybe we'll have the opportunity to have you on again as the re-licensure process comes up, as people are nearing their 2 years. Again, this has been Pop Health Podcast from Sacramento, California. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again, everyone. Bye.